Hey, how's it going? Thanks for tuning in. Before we get to my guest, I'm going to be in San Francisco this coming weekend, August 25th and 26th, for two shows, Saturday the 25th, Sunday the 26th at Cobb's Comedy Club. Great historic club. Always have a great time when I go to San Francisco. So any of you out there who've come to see me before, please come on back out. Bring some friends. If you haven't been, come hang out. If you're in the Bay Area, go to CobbsComedyClub.com for tickets. That's CobbsComedyClub.com for tickets. And you get $5 off using the code Paul, P-A-U-L. That would be me. And my one-man show is going on in New York. It's finishing up this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, August 20th, 21st, 22nd. Please come out. It's this audience interactive show that we've been having a great time with people telling stories. It's been really, really amazing. And you can go to Ticketmaster.com for tickets and use the code PMFAN and you get half off. PMFAN, half off. Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio is the name of the show. I hope you can make it. We got three shows left and then we're looking to revive it right after Labor Day. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 20th, 21st, 22nd. Come on out in New York City and San Francisco. Come to the Cobb's Comedy Club this coming Saturday and Sunday. DeepDiscount.com is my sponsor. Please support them because they help me do this podcast. I know I say that every time, but it's important you understand that. And I was looking around my cable box as usual. I can't find anything I wanted. You know, Netflix, eh. And I go to DeepDiscount.com and I'm finding stuff that I had forgotten about that are, when you look back at something, you realize, well, you took it for granted the first time around. Like this show, The Quick and the Dead. You know, listen who's in this show, in this movie. Sharon Stone, Gene Hackman, Russell Crowe, and just incredible cast and really good movie. And Sharon Stone, lovely, uncrossed her legs, unfortunately did not get to see the the business under there like in Basic Instinct, but you know she had the chaps on. However, Gene Hackman uncrossed his legs, did get to see his business. So there you go. It's kind of a win-win for everybody. I got The Quick and the Dead on deepdiscount.com. You go to the click on the banner on my website, paulmercurio.com, and use the code PM15, PM15. You get 15% off of anything that you buy. The Quick and Dead was only like less than 25 bucks for 4K Ultra HD. Really great stuff on the site. You got movies, you got TVs, you got vinyl, you got apparel. And they have new releases, too. This week, Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool 2. Grab this action-packed sequel for a great price at deepdiscount.com. Just click on the logo on my website. Use the code PM15 for extra savings. Be good to yourself. Support my sponsor. They support me. Come on. You're part of the family. Buy your favorites, old and new. Thank you, deepdiscount.com. Use the code PM15 for 15% off extra savings on anything you buy.
Hey, I had a way to make a lot of money fast. Guaranteed. I was selling space heaters. I heard people needed them. Turned out it was in July. Didn't go so well. Still got a lot of them in stock. My timing was off. But I have a way to double your money, guaranteed. It's from our friends at BetDSI, who are making that possible this football season when you register with the promo code PAUL100. That's PAUL100. Let me explain. NFL and NCAA football seasons are here, you know? And it's time to take your football knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. To help you get started with extra bang for your buck, BetDSI is offering to double your money on your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free, $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go when you use promo code PAUL100, okay? When it comes to football, BetDSI has odds on everything you could ever want to imagine. Whether it's NFL, NCAA, MLB, all other global sports, politics, celebrities, reality shows, let me tell you something. If it's happening, BetDSI, they got a line on it. My kid, he's been spending a lot of time in the shower lately. He's at that age. You know what I'm saying? My wife's like, you got to have the talk. I'm like, I'm not going to have the talk. Why not? Well, because my father didn't have the talk with me. You know, one time I said, Dad, I kind of got these feelings. And he was like, paint the house. Like, that was the talk. But the point is that BetDSI has the over and under on the kid, my kid spending time in the shower, 45 minutes. That's the over under. 45 minutes, my kid in the shower. Trust me, he's going to go over. BetDSI has been online for 20 years. It's built an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payment. It's got excellent mobile interface so you can play, win, and get paid anytime, anywhere. You know you're ready to win. Join BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com. Using promo code Paul100, and you already won by doubling your bankroll straight away. That's promo code Paul100. Get in on the action and get paid. Don't stand on the sidelines this season. What's that going to get you? Free cup of Gatorade? Be in it to win it and enjoy the games that much more when you play at BetDSI.
My guest this week, Jim Cantore, the face of the Weather Channel. That's right. That's the guy, you know, the big muscular guy who stands out in the snow and goes, "It's snowing!" Like that guy. But it's a really cool interview, and it was really cool to have him on because I've been watching this guy forever. All right. Enjoy Jim Cantore. Hope to see you at my Permission to Speak one-man show.
I'm very excited to have my guest on this week, who I've been watching for a long, long time, and who there's nobody that I watch on television who I can think of who's more passionate about what they do. He hosts AMHQ on the Weather Channel, but is probably best known for just incredible field coverage of major weather events. He's covered every major weather event of the past 30 years, Hurricanes Katrina and Irene, Superstorm Sandy, and it's the great Jim Cantore. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm starting to twitch a little bit. I haven't been out since Memorial Day. So I'm starting to twitch a little bit. You know what I mean? I need to get out there.
I said to my wife the other day, I'm like, where's Jim, man? He's just taking it easy. He's like, he's dialing it in. I haven't seen him out there, you know?
we're coming up to hurricane season.
We're coming up to hurricane season, so you're going to get busy soon, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're getting into the peak. You know, this is where if you look at that graph, it starts to go straight up in mid-August and into September. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been eerily quiet, frankly. Mm-hmm. This is the time of the year last year where we were beginning our you know, awful run at 10 hurricanes in a row, which is a record, by the way, for the Atlantic Basin. You know, started with Franklin.
Right.
And you know, we certainly don't have the same pattern, and typically no 2 years are really the same.
Right.
But yeah, this was kind of the beginning last year at a really awful and really busy time for us at the Weather Channel.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of a process geek, and there's a lot I want to talk to you about. Well, first of all, we have a little bit in common. We're both fellow New Englanders. You grew up in Vermont, and I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, and my parents have a summer house.
You're the flatlander, and I'm the mountain guy, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
And we skied a lot at Okemo and, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, yes. That's a great little secret, by the way, Okemo.
It really is.
It's just a beautiful little mountain. It's a short drive. You know, you don't have to go all the way to Killington.
Right.
It's a great little secret.
Yeah. And Stowe is a great place, too.
Remember, did you ever ski at Burke?
No. Is it good?
Burke Mountain up there. That was where we went during college.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oftentimes getting fresh tracks. And so
that's you don't get that a lot in those parts.
No.
Really great. I and my parents have a summer house in Narragansett, and we've gotten hit with some of these hurricanes, including Hurricane Bob, and then I think it might have been, if I'm wrong on the year, you tell me, but it might have been Gloria. Was it 34 or 58? There was one really massive one that took, this house was like this old shack that they put on cinder blocks. Like, this was in the day, like, when people didn't care about building codes near the water, like, they built, like...
Well, you're right in both. There's the Long Island Express, and then there's the two that came up in the 50s. Of course, I can't remember the name, but I remember, you know, 50s was kind of big on the East Coast, you know, Hazel and things like that. So we, you know, we've had some action. And of course, you know, of recent memory, Sandy.
Yeah. And this one particular hurricane took this house and lifted it. The water just literally lifted it and floated it two blocks up. It didn't hit another house. It ended up like on a road. And they put it on some trucks, and they basically drove it back and put it back on the cinder blocks.
There you go.
And it's just...
Those are the ones you like.
Yeah.
The ones you can put back in one piece.
Yeah, exactly. What do you... what is the... I'm kind of a process geek. So at this point in the season, so you're getting ready for hurricane season and all that, and just generally, what is the key piece of technology that you use? I mean, you know, we see these, you know, weather Doppler stuff that they advertise when they're talking about the local weather coverage, but like, what is sort of the thing that you can't live without as a meteorologist to kind of really get a sense of what's going to happen or about to happen, or
for hurricane season?
Yeah. Or just generally. And sort of,
I think you guys should keep it with hurricane, but the satellite, I mean, to look at satellite data and to watch trends, and it's not just the pictures on the infrared or the water vapor or the visible, but, you know, there's different satellites. Some look at how fast the waves are moving on the ocean. They see if there's actually circulations going on when they're not obvious on satellite. We call that a scatterometer. I mean, there's different. Without these satellites that we have up there, it would be very hard to see what's really going on over the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And how was this done before satellite? Effectively, was it weather balloons? Was it sort of?
I mean, how far back you want to go? I mean, you know, your ships, ship data. Some buoys, very widely scattered buoys out there.
Mm-hmm.
You miss things, so that's why a lot of times we say, you know, records going back to 1970, and then before that, you don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the tropical records go back to 1950,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, they started flying into these things.
Yeah.
So it was definitely more difficult, but it's pretty hard to miss something mm-hmm. these days. Like years ago, like subtropical storm Debbie that's out there right now, that probably wouldn't even have gotten named.
Oh, really?
All right. It's way up there in the North Atlantic. It's not going to bother anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things that, you know what, the fact that we have a satellite, that we can see it, mm-hmm. we can apply what we call a Dvorak technique to it.
Mm-hmm.
It has a number. So, you know what, it's an entity. It's got some tropical, some mid-latitude characteristics. So it's kind of a hybrid, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's a subtropical storm. But years ago, we wouldn't even have named it.
Yeah. Explain the different models. When I watch coverage, I see, you know, there's various models that you use and sort of then overlap or overlay or sort of, you know, compare. Like
the spaghetti models. So you're talking about? There's global models that look at the whole globe. There's statistical models that use climatology and different physics. There's dynamic models and things like that. I mean, and the reason why we call them spaghetti models is because you typically get what looks like a bowl of spaghetti out there.
Yeah, that's true.
Because a lot of different parameters are in those models, and it gives you different solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times when those spaghetti models agree on track and even to an extent intensity, you have a much higher confidence in what you can communicate to the viewer.
Right.
When they're all over the place, that means there's a lot of things we don't know about it.
Yeah.
And regardless of what they say, certainly about intensity, I still think we have a long way to go in terms of what we feel. But, you know, even the spaghettis, as good as they are, aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, even with Christie in the Pacific, we were watching one model take it west, and the other one was pulling it up into John.
Mm-hmm.
The European Center typically has the better mid-range model with tropical systems. It's been the better model over time.
Right.
So, I tend to lean on that one a little bit more. But
when you say mid-range,
you can't really ignore them. You have to look at everything. You really do.
Right. And then it's almost like a doctor taking data and interpreting it and then sort of overlaying
your
point of view.
Sometimes it's not obvious. Okay.
Right. And that's where
it's not this blob in your brain or your lung. That's a, if you will, a no brainer. But this is something that's, you know what? I think I see something there. I need to do more tests.
Right.
So that, you know, and you can probably tell if you listen to us, the confidence that we have, like Hector, there's really been no doubt for the last several days that it was going to go south of the Big Island. All right.
Right.
All the models, there wasn't much of a spaghetti plate at all. It looked like one big piece of linguine versus a bowl of spaghetti. So there was pretty high confidence in where it was going to track.
Right.
And then you look on a satellite and you look back at the data and you say, yeah, I can see why they're coming up with that.
Yeah.
There's no reason this should move north.
Do you ever get surprised anymore? Have you seen it all? I mean, I know you said something. You said why in response to, I think, a question about why do you love weather so much? And you said simple, it's the one thing I can't control.
Right. Exactly.
What do you mean by that? And do you get surprised anymore, or do you feel like you've seen it all and will have seen it all?
Well, I mean, I think about it. Like for humans, we love to control things because it makes our life simpler, more predictable, sometimes a little bit better to deal with because we push ourselves as humans.
Right.
But weather really isn't, I mean, that we can't do anything about it. If it's going to like open up with hail and thunder and lightning right over the top of you during your family reunion that you've planned now for over a year and a half.
Right.
You're like, geez, Louise.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, I take, of course, the blame for all that. I get blamed for all that, but still, I mean, those are the things we can't control. So,
yeah,
you know, it's up to us to give out the best information and also for the person who's planning an event, whether it be a family reunion or a NASCAR event or a college baseball tournament, whatever, those people have to kind of take the lead in saying, hey, you know, we got a risk of lightning here.
Yeah.
We have a risk of weather that could affect our people that are coming out to this venue.
Right.
So we have to prepare people for that.
Yeah. So growing up in Vermont, I mean, your dad said to you, I think if this is accurate, sort of, you know, you're in high school trying to figure out, well, maybe what you wanted to major in and
right.
what you want to do. And
right.
he said, and he noticed that, you know, you couldn't wait for the first snowflake to fall. And he said, if you got to get up every day for 40 years, do something you love. Do you think he had a better awareness of how passionate you were about weather than you were at the time? Did you see yourself even then, like, this is what I want to do as my life's calling?
Yeah, there's no way I probably would have gone to study it if it wasn't for my dad.
Yeah.
That was
yeah,
really
I think when
his.
You're an adult, you can kind of see things more clearly than a kid can at that point. He probably had a better window into what.
Yeah, he was probably worried about me. He's like, you know, this is not the smartest kid in the shed. I gotta find something for him to do. So, you know, he wasn't like this man of many words, but when he did say something, it was usually pretty meaningful. And
yeah.
I mean, I will never forget it because it was a sit down at the dining room table.
Mm.
I wasn't sitting at the head of the table. I never did that because that was
right.
always his seat. But I sat, you know, to the right of him, and he walked through and he just looked at me. Hands were on the table. Like, what are we going to do here? What do you want to do?
Mm.
And so, you know, I laid out a couple things, and then he said, you know, I really think you need to go study the weather. You're an absolute freak when it snows. You leave the barn light on all night till the first flakes start to dry. You go rake the yard so you can make sure you can see the first flakes on the ground. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Wow.
And he goes, look, son, you have to wake up every day for the next 50 years of your life. You better love what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you know, in retrospect, did he say that to me because he wasn't happy with what he did? Because I mean, my dad, like, he went and got his master's at New Haven even after we were born.
Mm.
I mean, he would always go down to classes, and you know, he was a postmaster.
Right.
He was active duty in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even after we were born and after as we were growing up. So, but I think my dad was a pretty happy guy. But I just think he noticed that passion in me about the weather. I was different. I was a different person when it was either thundering and lightning outside or certainly snowing.
Well, what was it? Was it sort of just a natural curiosity? Like, why did that just happen? And did you have curiosity
about
other things?
I love the ferocity.
The what?
I love the intensity.
Really?
At which the skies delivered.
Yeah.
There was just something about that, especially the blizzard of 1978, which everybody in New England remembers.
Oh, I remember that.
Especially
I remember
you.
Standing in that,
you know,
thing
right?
with my buddy Stephen Dodd. Like, don't go out. We were the idiots. Don't go out. We're like, screw this. We're going out.
Yeah,
and we're
going out, man.
Providence.
Are you kidding me? I'm not going to miss this for anything.
No,
so,
we're walking,
you know,
around Providence and helping people move their stuck cars, and we're seeing, like we had, like, goggles on. We're like, let's take our goggles off and see how hard our face gets hit with the snow pellets.
Right.
Like, it was, like, the stoop. But it was, like, yeah, like, it was great, you know?
Right, so here's this force that we can't control,
right?
But yet it kind of gives us this euphoric high that we don't get from anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me at 14 years old now, during 78, I got snow up to my chest because it was a big winter already.
Yeah.
And then we get another 30 inches
yeah.
with that thing. And by the time they finished plowing the streets, I mean, there were snow piles as high as roofs. And I'm just like, even after the storm, I was just in awe of the whole thing. We were making snow tunnels.
Yeah.
My brother and I had to shovel off our roof because we had this huge porch that wrapped around the whole house. And we had a slate roof. So all the snow came down on the top of that porch.
Right.
And that weight load obviously needed to be removed. So, you know, Vincent and I, we shoveled off the porch and we created this huge snow pile. And it was as tall as the porch.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like, Vin, who's jumping off first, you or me? So he goes, oh, I'm doing it. So he jumps off and he disappears.
Wow.
I almost lost my brother during the blitz. Yeah, I almost lost him in the snow pile. So, you know, I jumped down after him and dug down about a foot or two down, and there's his head just out of the snow. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was crazy.
And the idea that this all just fell from the sky, you know, like one little drop,
exactly.
One little flake at a time.
That kind of amazement.
Do you think if you hadn't grown up in Vermont with the drastic changes in seasons and sort of the interesting changes in weather patterns to just be part of, that you'd be doing what you're doing today? Like if you grew up in California or Arizona?
You know what? That's a great question. I mean, I certainly know of people that grew up in Tornado Alley that were just fascinated by tornadoes and severe weather. People that grew up, like, you know, my partner, Stephanie, grew up on the Gulf Coast, fascinated with hurricanes and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's regional or geographically based on what exactly got us in there. But once I got to the Weather Channel and started learning about tropical weather and severe weather, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then being out in certainly a hurricane or a severe weather outbreak, I mean, there was a thrill to that, but there's something about snow, you know, that, especially after now that I've gone through so much death and destruction with hurricanes and tornadoes.
Yeah.
You don't leave feeling awful when you finally finish your mission. It's like, oh,
yeah.
You know, it's typically in blizzards and snowstorms, it's a disruption, but it's not like a death wish.
Yeah.
You know,
you had said about Katrina, everyone is spilling their guts. They just lost everything, and you feel awful because you can't do anything except talk into the camera back to you. It's like, I want to grab a chainsaw and help these people, and I can imagine. And I think you said it was like the first time you saw and smelled death. Like, it was pretty intense. So.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty brutal. I certainly think I had a little bit of PTSD from that. Because of just, I felt guilty about leaving.
Yeah.
Even though we were out there for like 17 days or whatever, and sleeping in our car and, you know, eating frosted mini wheats with Cheese Whiz on top. I mean, it was just this ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I was abandoning these people. It just was a really bad feeling I had when we left, even though I couldn't even see straight because I was so exhausted. But I don't know. It was really weird. But I will never forget Katrina.
How do you not?
The worst.
I mean, I know you're not supposed to step in. You're supposed to be an objective reporter. But like, how do you not, or do you, when the camera's off, step in and help a little bit, whether it's Katrina or whatever? Like, what? How do you not do that?
Well, if you look back at Harvey last year, we came upon. I mean, this was literally every day. We were in the middle of rescues. The people were just being pulled out of buildings as the flooding is like getting higher and higher.
Mm.
But we came up on this rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And so a group from, I think, Chicago it was, they were down there and they were rescuing people from this building, which was now surrounded by water.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology today, where you don't have to be tethered to a mic cord or an IFB cord, where it's all, you know, a clip on and you're kind of free. Mm-hmm. You can walk around and show more. And, you know, as these people were coming, as they were pulling them out of the building, they were coming toward the area where the land was dry.
Mm.
I mean, we just walked over there and started helping them come out of the boat.
Yeah.
I mean, and I made that a part of our shot.
Hmm.
And so, you know, because I've stood around for years. I mean, it's hard not to have heart and feelings when you're out there. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know. I just, you know what? I mean, I'm not trained as this perfect broadcaster that has to do everything right and rigid. I mean, I'm really kind of just me, and that's always been the way I've been. It's the way I've gone about my business on the air.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I want to go help somebody, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
After 30 years in the business, that's what I'm going to do. It's not about the television.
Well, it's funny, you know, you said
that's me.
Yeah, well, that's so compelling to watch. Like, I feel like you're the real deal. Like, you know what you're talking about. And, like, when you say it, then I know it's gospel. And, like, just, I mean, just you jump. When those thunders, uh, thunderstorms hit during snow.
The thunderstorm. Yeah, that was pretty. That was crazy. That story. Yeah.
That was like, it's just the best thing to watch on TV because, you know, it can be so scripted on TV that this is like, you can just feel it. Like it just oozes through the screen. Like, this guy really loves this. And, you know, you mentioned your experience with your dad and how you'd leave the barn light on and the snowflakes. Anybody that I talk to on my podcast, I love to talk to people about what they do and how they do it and how they came to where they are. You can point to a moment in time in their childhood. I have Bob Costas on, and I go, when did you know that? He goes, well, looking back now, he goes, there was this one moment as a kid where I, you know, kind of, it was clear that I was probably going to do this. He goes, I would lie in bed at night in St. Louis, and I'd be listening to the Cardinals games, and I was more enthralled with Jack Buck's voice and call of the game than I was the game itself. I would sit with the blanket over me. I was supposed to be asleep and the transistor radio on next to my ear, and I would fall asleep listening to this guy. And you can point to, like, you with your dad at the table and sort of, you know, your brother and all of that, kind of what they do today, and that really comes through, like that. And so you're doing a service, but you're also obviously doing something you're passionate about. And I think that really comes out, you know, as a viewer, you know.
And I'm going to kind of bridge some of these two stories with you, because I've had a chance to work with Bob during the Olympics and also during some sporting events, football games and things like that. And Bob is just like this consummate professional.
Oh, my God.
He loves the facts. He loves getting them straight. You know, he takes your ideas sometimes. He goes, you know, hold on, wait a minute. That's actually a good idea. I mean, he's really great. Just a wonderful guy to be around. And I know he's a big Yankee fan, as am I. So, I'm kind of a really screwed up New England kid. I was born in Southwest Connecticut.
What's that about?
Of I-91 along Interstate 84. So that little quadrant of Connecticut is heavy Yankee. My dad's from New York. Okay. So even though I really consider Vermont my home state and the state I grew up in, that's Red Sox Nation.
Right.
Up there.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm really this kind of screwed up New England kid, but just working, one of the best things about my career in the last is being able to work with NBC Sports.
Yeah.
That has just been an awesome opportunity.
What's
whether it be the NHL Classic or the Olympics.
Oh, man.
I will never forget that.
Yeah. Did you do the one at Fenway?
The one at Fenway, yes.
Oh, man.
And I'll never forget the day before. You know, we had the skies opened up with snow during practice.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the most awesome sight. It coated everything with white.
Mm-hmm.
It was just phenomenal. The big game at the big house.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally snowing at 2 inches an hour. Now, granted, if you're a hockey player, you know, the ice coated with snow is not the best thing.
Right.
It really slows down the game. But for the fan to be in a stadium with 100,000 people, it looks like a snow globe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just awesome.
Yeah, it's like God just like said, I'm going to
I mean, as bad as the stuff that I've been in, that was just awesome.
Yeah.
It was just awesome being a part of that.
In terms of, you know, sort of, why, and I know you probably get asked this, but, and I sit and yell at my TV and I grew up and I would do it sometimes, run around in the snowstorms, but especially the hurricanes. Why don't people listen and leave? Like, why do they think staying in their house or apartment when a hurricane is coming is a good idea when everybody is telling them not to? What is it? Do you have any?
I think it's a couple things. Sometimes the end result turns out better than the forecast.
Right.
All right.
So they'll go, this didn't happen before they said this, and it wasn't.
Why did I leave? Why did I run out of gas?
Yeah.
Why was I in traffic for 12 hours?
Yeah.
And yet I come back and nothing has happened to my home.
Right.
That's the first thing.
Mm.
The second thing is kind of part of the first thing. Oh my God, do I want to be a part of 12 hours worth of traffic? Do I want to run out of gas with my family out in the middle of the highway and we have no place to go? You know, I mean, the horror story, I mean, the problem is too many people leave. And they leave, they go too far away.
You
really don't need to go a whole state away. But it's just, we can't predict human reaction to things.
Right. Right.
Like the greatest example is the Atlanta snowstorm.
Right.
Local officials thought they had it right. Okay, we're going to shut down schools. We know there's a little bit of snow coming.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to send people home early. Mm-hmm. Well, the snow started earlier. And so, as soon as everybody saw it snow in Atlanta, a city of 6 million plus people, that is, in my opinion, one of the poorest, you know, in other words, we need an outer loop. With all the commerce that comes through this city, you really needed an outer loop that should have been here years ago.
Right.
But when you have 6 plus million people leaving all at once because they see snowflakes coming down. And then, you know, it's exacerbated by a heavy snow situation and colder temperatures, which is now causing that melting snow to freeze on the roads. And the snow plows, what little they have, can't go anywhere. There's no salting the roads. There's no plowing the roads. And it becomes an ice skating rink.
Yeah.
So now you've got millions of people trapped out on the roads.
Yeah.
So that's the disaster within the disaster. We can't predict what humans are going to do in a situation. So now, next time, it's like, oh, I'm never leaving my house again.
Exactly.
So that horror, my point is that horror you went through in trying to do the right thing was so much worse than what you imagined that you could go through.
Ah, got it. So it
that makes our job incredibly difficult, because every time we think we make inroads to getting the message out, it gets worse because what we can't predict is human reaction. How
we're
going to behave during an event like that.
Hey, listen, before we wrap up, so over your 30 plus years of doing this, global warming, I would imagine that, what are your thoughts on it? Does it exist? Is it real? Have you seen it in your job sort of alter, you know, weather patterns and all of that? What is your take on that?
I wish I could speak as confidently about the forecast over the next 24 hours, you know, but I just can't do that. I mean, because there's just a lot of things. Here's what I'll tell you. Here's where I feel. There's no question that temperatures are coming up, and there's no question with warmer air, you can hold more water. You can get heavier downpours, even with the same physics. I think man has a part in this, but I don't know how much.
Why aren't you sure?
You know, I don't know how much of a part we have in it.
Because we can't measure
I certainly think there's some part, because when I look at a satellite picture at night and I see all these city lights out there across North America, I'm like, there's got to be an impact from all that. There's got to be some kind of feedback that's going on. But I just don't understand, and I'm certainly not confident enough in what I know about the ocean atmospheric system and how it all works over time. But, you know, you go back and look at 30 years, we're absolutely seeing a warming. Is the atmosphere reacting to that? Possibly. By more stagnant weather patterns.
Is that resulting as in, you mentioned 10 hurricanes that you're keeping an eye on possibly for this hurricane, higher numbers of hurricanes, tropical storms?
There's no correlation. We don't have enough data to make that correlation. The thinking on that is, could this, because you have a more unstable atmosphere potentially, could we get stronger hurricanes out of this?
Right.
Do we have a jet stream system now that maybe is moving a little bit slower? Is it a little bit more stagnant because of this warming that, you know, we're getting situations more like Harvey where we're getting, you know, more heavy rain. But I just, you know, again, to kind of trace that back to what man's part in that is, I can't tell you with a great amount of confidence. I will say I think there is some. So I'm on that side of the table, but I'm not so like, oh my God, I you know, we're doomed. We're done.
Yeah, no. I just was curious because
look at the wildfire situation right now, okay?
Right.
You go back to the 1800s and the 1900s, we let those fires burn, you know, acres and acres and acres. So in essence, what you did was, even during dry periods, you burned down that fuel.
Right.
So since, you know, 1970, we've moved into this wildland interface in abundance.
Yeah.
We all want, you know, to be surrounded by a lot of acres, and we all want to be, you know, out there with nature. And we've also done a lot of fire suppression. So we've built up a tremendous amount of fuel. And in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen a phenomenal drought in the West. and a phenomenal amount of heat.
Right.
So you've kind of got this whole thing kind of amalgamating into this. Okay. Yeah. There's climate change. The temperatures are warming. We've had a drought in California, but we've also suppressed fire and we've not done as many prescribed burns because there's a lot of people living now where these areas that we used to just let burn.
Right.
So it's all kind of mixed together. So yeah, again, it goes back to my saying, how much is man driving that?
Right, right.
Are we driving the climate or are we actually driving the predicament?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So
I often say life lives in the gray area in general, and that's exactly what this is. It's sort of an amalgamation of things, and you know, also I think we're much more conservation conscious than we were years ago. I live in New York City, and you know, Central Park is like you break a twig and someone comes and gives you a ticket, like, and it's great, you know what I mean? But I understand what you're saying. When you put all of those factors together, it's hard to pick one out and say that's the main.
But what blows my mind at the end of the day is why. How could anyone not agree on cleaner water,
right,
better air to breathe,
right,
better ways of using what the earth gives us to eat, to use for energy? I mean, I just don't understand why that's not a common thread.
Yeah,
I kind of think it's trying to go that way, but there always seems to be an agenda.
I think, to me,
the agenda is going to be being a good steward to your planet. Great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think money gets in the way, right? So if clean air is a priority, but that means more.
But I mean, you know, to me, I'd be a heck of a lot more worried about all the plastics rolling around in the ocean right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I
don't know if you saw this a few weeks ago, but down in the Dominican Republic, I saw literally beaches littered with tons and tons of plastic bottles and and they're literally, it's overwhelming, the amount of plastic. It's disgusting. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's start with those things that are going on and hopefully we'll make some inroads from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I could talk to you all day. I've really just been a big fan of yours, and I just think what you do is, it's important, but it's also great. And
thanks,
frankly,
it's
really
been a good ride. Listen, I don't know everything. I'm not the best broadcaster out there, but I am true to myself. I'm passionate about what I do, and I hope people always know that when I'm out there, whether it be in the field or on the air, that I just want to get them the best information they can and make a decision for themselves or their family.
Yeah. I think you're doing a great job and you're doing an important service, and I can't wait for hurricane season to see you standing sideways in a storm getting pelted with rain. It's really great to watch, but also important. So it's really great to have you on. I'm really, really excited to talk to you. So thank you. It's Jim Cantore. He is the man at the Weather Channel.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you will see him soon, probably all over television, and then in the winter screaming about snow, which he loves. So thanks for being on, man. This is really fun to have you on.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
All right, there you go. That's Jim Cantore. Really cool guy. Into snow. Made a career out of it. How cool is that? And go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the deep discount banner. Get discounts there. And go to ticketmaster.com for permission to speak with Paul Mercurio. My one-man show. Only 3 more days left. And use the code PMFAN. And you get 50 half-price tickets. Hope to see you at my show. Tell some stories.